Hi everyone. Thank you for joining us for our water cooler chat on a Wednesday. Today we are going to be talking about the impact of COVID-19 on clinical supply chains. I know we're a few months in, and so one of the questions that PCI has received through these water cooler chats is really what has the impact of COVID-19 been on clinical supply chain? Has there been any delays? What have the risk mitigation strategies been? So what we will be discussing today is some observations that we have seen. With me is PCI's distribution manager, Thomas Johnson, based in Rockford, and David Spillett from Work Courier, who has over 15 years of experience. Thank you very much for joining us, David. Really appreciate it. Before we get started, I just wanted to direct everyone's attention to the screen. And if you have any questions for us during this water cooler chat, please do find your way to the chat function on the toolbar in Teams. I do know that some people have not been able to use that chat function. So if you are not able to access that, please feel free to contact me on my iPhone. My phone number is country code 1-619-613-0808. And you can reach me via text message, iMessage, or WhatsApp should you have a question that you want to pose to the panelists. So with that, Thomas, I'll turn it over to you. Thomas?
Thank you. Over to you. And thanks everyone for joining. I think my internet, I apologize. I think I'm starting to stall out here.
We hear you perfectly.
Can you hear me, Marissa?
Yes, we can hear you perfectly.
I can't hear you, which is...
David, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, Marissa. Thomas, we can hear you too. Oh, I certainly can.
All right, one moment.
This system was working perfectly 5 minutes ago, so that just to reassure everyone else.
Thomas, we can hear you just fine. Hey, David, are you able to put a message in the chat for Thomas? Maybe for some reason I'm not able to access the chat.
Certainly try.
Okay, I'm in now. Anyways, David, while we wait for Thomas to get online, why don't you start off and give us an overview on what you have seen over the last few months at World Courier?
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride for the last 4 or 5 months. And I guess I should start by thanking all at PCI for allowing me the opportunity to join you today. It's a real privilege to participate, and thanks for that opportunity, really. So I guess to answer the initial question in terms of, is there a way to prevent disruption to clinical supply chains during COVID-19? I think it's difficult to say categorically that there is a way. I think there are definitely ways to mitigate risk, and certainly in the 4 to 5 months that we've currently been working through this global pandemic, the one thing that I'm still surprised about is how little disruption there actually has been in the context of the clinical supply chain. As you'd expect, there have been a number of challenges along the way, but fundamentally, I think things have held up quite well, really. Particularly in the early days, the situation was changing quite quickly. We really needed to think on our feet. Governments were closing borders and imposing new restrictions whilst, I'm not sure if others can't hear us. I'm seeing a note to say that no sound from somebody else.
I can hear you.
Thank you, Maggie. Sandy, your speaker is probably muted. Yeah, David, please continue.
Okay, great. Really in the early days, there was a significant disruption, I guess, and we did have to think on our feet. There were numerous instances where various governments around the world were introducing restrictions when consignments were already in the air. So, you know, if we take consignments originated at some of PCI sites in the UK, they might be routed via, say, into Heathrow, across to Frankfurt, and then out to wherever they're going from there. In that scenario, there were numerous consignments that got halfway through their journey, just as the restrictions were being imposed. And as soon as the restrictions are imposed, obviously, the airlines effectively stopped traveling along those routes. We constantly monitor all consignments and reroute accordingly based on the optimal solution at the time. But there was a significant amount of having to change the plan and be adaptable effectively to the minute live when things were changing, you know, and outside of anyone's control, really. But I think part of the reason why we were able to adapt so quickly is that we have learned from similar situations in the past, things like the Ebola outbreak, HIV, the Icelandic volcano. There've been learnings from all of them, really. And whilst we've never seen anything to the scale of COVID-19, we've certainly learned from all those other incidents and implemented contingency plans accordingly. Things like multiple approved partners for any given route, utilizing alternate modes of transport. So, you know, most consignments travel by air, but we've also got ground options on a number of routes where that's practical. We're also utilizing modern packaging technologies, which prevent delays or are not as susceptible to an immediate temperature deviation if a consignment is delayed during transit, you know, as it likely would be if it needs to be rerouted or if a site isn't available to receive the medication, at the time originally agreed, really. Thomas, are you back with us?
Can you hear me now?
We can. Shall I? Thomas, do you want to kick off and take over?
Yeah, I'm going to try it here.
All right, I think we're good now. I apologize for the technical difficulties on my end. So I caught on to part of the last bit of what you were discussing, David, and I think we saw a lot of similar effects with the material that was in transit or, you know, getting ready to go. And it seemed like the doors and the borders were just being slammed shut. And I think with some of the concerns regarding what was actually taking place in the environment, we also saw this massive push to get material out. So like our internal order volume went through the roof. At the same time, everything's coming to a screeching halt. So I'm sure you guys saw that supply, those supply lines and those lanes that you guys use just kind of get jammed up. But it seemed, to your point, some of the other factors that we've dealt with in the past, definitely the Ebola outbreak and the volcano that we kind of went through, it could have been worse, right? Since that time, I've seen, you know, studies kind of, if studies were in the process and they were, you know, well along with what the sponsor was looking at as far as supplying their patients, there didn't seem to be much drop off there. We saw those studies just continue to kind of truck on, maybe get some additional shipments out, smaller shipments to make sure that, you know, globally they were supplied efficiently. I did see some that would have been coming down the pipeline that just kind of fizzled out or put on hold for the moment. Did you experience something similar in that regard with what you saw?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. And I think there have been, you know, a number of trials in which recruitment might have been placed on hold, depending on the indication. I think there are a number of new trials that have been placed on hold as well, but they've also been backfilled by the COVID-19 specific trials that have been initiated, and even the sort of compassionate supply of medicines in the first instance, you know, coming back to the original confusion around borders being shut and transit being, or our ability to travel being reduced. There was a lot of confusion early on, and it subsequently occurred to everyone really that, wait there, we're in the middle of a global pandemic. Medicine and the movement of medicine is absolutely critical. So following the initial panic, things have certainly settled down a lot, and obviously a part of that spike in activity that you've mentioned is the supply of you know, new COVID-19 therapies and compassionate supply of other therapies for use with COVID-19 patients. So we've definitely seen that trend too. We run a poll a short while ago, and it's interesting that circa 80% of the participants that replied to that poll suggested that any trials that had been put on hold would be restarted at the earliest opportunity. And I was expecting a figure higher than 80% until I realized that 15% replied don't know. So effectively, there was a very small population that actually replied no, they don't think those trials are going to be reinitiated, which I guess is to be expected, really. If there was a need for that therapy prior to COVID-19, that need won't have gone away purely because we've worked through a global pandemic over the last couple of months, really.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think we, or at least myself and my team here, kind of expected the same thing. We expected a large number of those to come back. But unfortunately, it's kind of that guessing game because there's that such uncertainty with what the sponsors are looking at, with the supply chain interrupted the way that it has been. You know, I speak to like a few instances that I've had where now we're looking at different delays that we didn't necessarily have to deal with previously. Maybe there's only, you know, certain airlines going to certain places. A lot of the lanes have closed, or a good portion of lanes have closed. And so now, instead of looking at, you know, a 2 to 3 day turnaround, we're looking at 3 to 5 day delays, and that can extend even greater given some areas. But there's a lot of variables there as well that we can't necessarily all just say, okay, well, this is all COVID, but it definitely provides some challenges for being able to anticipate those moves.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, there are different approaches that have been applied in different for different scenarios, really. So, you know, I think initial data suggested that there was about an 80% decline in passenger aircraft or freight capacity on passenger aircraft. I should correct myself. But fortunately, we've also seen about a 25% uplift in cargo only aircraft. So the one has sort of offset the other, but obviously demand for those cargo only aircraft has also increased significantly throughout this period, as you'd expect. Now, we've on certain lanes, we've been able to block book capacity, such as, you know, key lanes from Europe to the US. We can block book capacity in advance to ensure that we can, you know, certainly, you know, effectively guarantee that we can keep the consignments moving. But there are other routes where it's become, you know, a lot more challenging. Potentially certain routes around the world where the cargo aircraft might fly once or twice a week. So there are numerous destinations popular for clinical trials where it has been quite challenging. You know, product is still moving definitively, but you do need time. And, you know, coming back to that original question, really, as to what we can do to mitigate risk. And I think giving yourselves as much time as you possibly can is really critical in these unprecedented times. You know, there's no such thing as, you know, coming to providers like ourselves too early, effectively. The earlier you can engage with your partners, the better chance you have, I guess.
So yeah, David and Thomas, we do have a question from the audience. David, I think this is a question directed to you. This is from Damien. Thanks for the question, Damien. Is there some specific concerns for shipment custom clearance of IMP to be shipped from Europe to US for clinical trial purposes?
Yeah, no more than usual. Certainly in my context, I've been asked this question in numerous events of this nature over the years, and I know some of my predecessors, and we've talked in the past about the challenges of getting, you know, product into emerging markets and the like. But the reality is with FDA and, you know, other challenges getting product into the US, it can be a lengthy process to get product into the US on occasions. You know, clearly it's not, you guys don't live in an emerging market as such, but just the processes can be, can take an amount of time in under normal circumstances. And even in that scenario, it's not knowing exactly how long it's going to take that presents a particular concern. But I'm not aware that anything has changed or become worse throughout the pandemic to answer that particular question. Thomas, I don't know if you've had any other experience in.
Yeah, I mean, most of what you've spoke to. So at the beginning, just like everywhere else, there was a quick backlog of incoming at customs, but they were able to turn it around within 2 weeks. And then they're sticking to like their standard timelines. You know, they can take as long as 2 weeks, but typically 7 days, and they're moving material into the country.
So a follow-up that I have to that question, have you seen anywhere in the world where the importing and where the shipment and custom clearance process has taken longer than usual?
Yeah, there've been numerous examples, and sort of customs authorities, regulatory authorities are encountering the same challenges that we're encountering in terms of, you know, staff that might not be able, or staff having to be home-based where possible, people potentially not being able to present for work either because they've been, you know, personally impacted by the virus and having to self-quarantine, or they may be, you know, they live with somebody that's considered high risk. So for that reason, haven't been able to present at work. But generally, again, I think that things are moving quite well. There are inevitably delays, but the greatest challenges that we've experienced, particularly early on, was just those cancellation of flights, really. And things changing so quickly, you know, even once you've committed to a routine, as I said earlier, the product's halfway there and all of a sudden the second leg of the journey doesn't exist anymore. So having to think on your feet and react accordingly, I guess.
Okay. So, and right now, do you see the number of flights increasing anytime soon or not quite yet?
Yeah, it has increased, certainly in terms of the freight capacity that I touched upon and measures taken on key routes to secure that capacity in advance has definitely been beneficial. I'm not seeing, you know, anywhere near the same volume of queries concerning, you know, what can we do differently. I think we have all now adapted to, unfortunately, what's become the new normal. And clearly we're going to have to further adapt as we move forward. You know, things have inevitably changed, and I think in certain contexts we've actually hit the fast forward button with initiatives like, you know, direct to patient supply that were prominent prior to and large discussion topics and ongoing for a relatively small population of clinical trials. But I think this has really brought that subject to the fore and the realization that, you know, longer term, if we could deliver IMP directly to patients' home, reduce them, the necessity for them to travel to a clinical site, that sort of mitigates risk. And I think it's going to, you know, moving forward, we are all going to make decisions in a different way than we, or different decisions that we might have done in the past. You know, presenting at a hospital or your GP surgery under normal circumstances would be considered relatively low risk. Now the possibility of going to those institutions, you know, I guess even our patients are taking, or even us and our patients are taking a risk-based approach to that type of travel, particularly if you need to use public transport to get to one of those facilities or something of that nature. You know, it's not, and it's never going to be one size fits all approach. There are certain trials that and products that fit the model, and there are others that don't. But I think we're certainly going to see a significant uplift in demand, as we already have. It's been exponential this far, and I think it's only set to continue, really.
Okay, so Thomas, based on, I know you've mentioned that you haven't seen many new studies beginning because people are kind of in a wait and hold pattern. Are you currently seeing a slight uptick in new studies being initiated, or are you still seeing a hold on that?
I'd say it's still pretty level. I mean, aside from any additional COVID studies that are being fast tracked through, really those studies that you know, were kind of on the cusp of being initiated or just began, those have kind of just, they're still in that old pattern. I would expect to see them, I guess, as countries begin reopening or we get better information from, you know, the supply chain standpoint, from individuals from World Courier or, you know, others or what have you. But at the moment, it's all kind of a broad educated guess when we might see some of those.
Okay. To the audience, if you have a specific country that you're curious about how COVID has impacted, go ahead and write it in the chat. And David and Thomas, if they have an experience with that, they can talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, is it worth thinking a little bit about the new normal? So, you know, these trials, we're talking about the COVID-19 trials have touched a little bit on direct to patient. But Thomas, are there any other sort of developments that you see in terms of, you know, the new normal? When we were chatting previously, we were talking about things like, you know, larger patient packs and, you know, getting more medication out to sites in advance to mitigate the risk.
I think some studies we're starting to see there was that first push up front, and then there was a lot of small resupplies out of country to just make sure that their depots were sufficiently supplied for their sites. And we're starting to see some of the longer reaching shipments going out. So where we would typically see a resupply for, you know, 2 months, we might be looking at a resupply for 4 months or something along that line, those lines. The international and making sure that depots are supplied, that for us on let's call it a depot level, those shipments went up by like 25%, just about 25%, I should say. So, you know, the sponsors are identifying what they need, and I think that'll start to become the new norm for us, you know, the longer lead times for the material. And there's a lot of variables that go into that as well, yeah. Obviously, and how they are going to keep that supply chain good for them. But I am seeing that work that direction.
Yeah, agreed. I guess it, you know, we've seen over the last number of years more focus on a lean supply methodology and trying to reduce overage. And I guess this is an example of a scenario where that might have, you know, worked against us a little bit. And, you know, I think, as you said, we may find ourselves in a situation where there's, you know, a change to the supply strategy and more medication going out to sites. But I also think it's likely that we'll see more medication where there isn't a significant risk of placing more medication with a patient, you know, in a patient's home, etc. I think it's likely that we'll end up with more medication going into clinical kits and being sent out to the patients up front rather than continuously, you know, resupplied throughout the course of the protocol, really. And again, the risk benefit cost ratio is going to vary for all the various protocols that we support, but I think it's definitely going to trigger a number of sponsors to review their portfolio and, you know, think about the protocol itself. And, you know, is it logical to send out 30 tablets when you could potentially send out 60?
Okay, we have about a minute left. So some countries that people are curious as to whether you've seen any delays at Canada, France, UK, and L, which I'm assuming is Netherlands. And Turkey, have you seen any drastic delays or anything out of the ordinary in those countries?
Thomas, do you want to take?
For mine, not particularly for those countries. Nothing drastic. I think, you know, to my comment earlier, the average that we're seeing is about a 3 to 5 day wait. Just to make sure that we're getting the lanes, we're getting the spot on the cargo plane, everything's getting set up. But for some of these, I think it's even just standard 2 to 3 days. So it's not, we're not seeing anything big with this.
Yeah, I agree, Thomas. And I think with those countries specifically, they benefit from having land borders. You know, we have, in many instances, even if flights are cancelled, been able to drive consignments across borders and facilitate delivery that way. Or even in a couple of examples, early on in Italy, we ended up doing effectively a handover at the border. So we had, you know, a driver presenting the product at the border in France and a driver in Italy turning up to, you know, physically receive it across the border from them. and facilitate onward delivery that way. So the, there are benefits to these countries having land borders, I'm pleased to say, but obviously that's not the case in others, and it's the others that have tended to cause more challenges, particularly those routes that are not supplied every day.
Yep, that makes sense. Thank you so much, Thomas and David. We are out of time for a second. So any additional questions, I'll make sure to get you, and we'll get those answers to people through email. So everyone, if I can direct your attention to the screen, we do have some great upcoming PCI water cooler chats coming next week. We would like to introduce a new technology where it's my understanding that there isn't a comparable solution. This is for if you want to put your oral solid dose in a blister pack and still control the moisture and humidity. PCI has worked with CSB Actar to come up with active blister solution that will extend the shelf life of drug products. So if you are wondering how you can do that for your oral solid dose and still want to use blister packs, tune in to next week for sure. On June 11th, we will be looking at cell and gene therapy supply solutions that we will be joined by Ed Grollo, the head of our SMART team. On June 18th, by popular demand, we are going to do a session on clinical supply solutions for small companies. Mark Schapansky will be leading that one, and he has quite a bit of experience helping small companies work through demand planning. And then on June 25th and July 9th, we are going to take as deep of a dive as we can in 30 minutes into clinical materials valuation in the US. That's going to be on June 25th. And then on July 9th, we're going to do the same thing, but for the EU. So if you haven't registered for any of these yet, please go to pciservices.com/water. And we'd love to have you join us at a future event. And then finally, tomorrow, if my slide will advance, we will be doing the second of our webinar trilogy on one-way ticket to commercial launch with our partners, AMRI Global, Viacom, and Cardinal Health. We'll be talking about what are the clinical to commercial synergies that we can look at in terms of packaging, design, and processes, so that you can get from your clinical trials to commercial as efficiently as possible. If you'd like to join us for that, our speaker will be Greg Ross, who has both experience on the clinical project management side and the commercial project management side. Please register for that at amriglobal.com/viacom2020.html. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for your time, and we hope to see you again. Thank you so much, David, for joining us.
A pleasure. Thanks, Marissa. Right. Thank you all. Bye for now.
Bye. Thanks, Marissa. Thanks, David.
Thanks, everyone. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.